Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is Podcast 363. We're going to talk about Minnesota, the land of political confusion. And I'll tell you why in a couple seconds. I've been having a lot of discussions recently. I wanted to do a Minnesota news update, and I started working on this, and it kind of ended up being kind of a discussion of what's wrong with Minnesota when it comes to politics and policies. So we'll do that in this podcast, Minnesota Updates from the Land of Confusion, Minnesota in Podcast 363. Well, today was a great day. Great weather we're having in Minnesota, at least in southern Minnesota right now. It is warm. It has the feeling of being a hot summer. It's almost hot now. I hate to say it, but I just had dinner and sat out on the deck, and it was 65. It was close to, I guess it was 75 or 74 today. The sun feels really warm, and it feels like it's going to be a hot summer. Now, I mention this because I'm going to mention Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, and I'm not talking about heating. I'm talking about AC. This is a really good time to have Ryan come out and check your air conditioning, because it has to be above 70 for them to check the air conditioning. And there's a couple of key points here. A lot of times the coils have to be cleaned out in order for the AC to be effective. And also there's a filter issue, and they need to check your unit and all those things. So it's a perfect time to have them come and check. And as Greg Ryan said this weekend, tell them that we need to come and check the AC for the global warming summer that is coming. When they're out checking the AC, it's a great time to talk to them about in-floor heating. If you're planning on putting a room in for next year, in-floor heating is great. And then the other thing is, interest rates are still low, so people are building bathrooms and additions and things of that nature. And don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for those types of projects. One more thing, and that is emergency service, which Ryan is known for. Here's the number for all of those issues. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. You call 612-927-6488 metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too for basically over 60 years. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. Once again, you call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. First of all, I'm going to be out speaking to the Apple Valley Tea Party group on, I believe, May 25th. And I've been thinking about, well, what am I going to talk about? And so I think part of this podcast has been building up. I've been talking to various people, just trying to get an idea of where people stand politically. Obviously, just spoke out at the SD48 Republican group in Eden Prairie, which is a little bit different constituency than the North Metro, let's say, or the 6th District, although I'm not sure, and that's one of the things I want to talk about in this podcast. I'm also hearing from people who have been long-term politically involved in the state who are moving. They basically have had it. So here's what's going on in the current time frame. First of all, in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, House Republicans have voted to increase the education budget, which they've been slammed for, not because they voted to increase it, but because they left the University of Minnesota out, which is, you know, if you go over to the U, I can't imagine there isn't enough money to run the University of Minnesota, but that's another story entirely. But what's happened is the Republicans, while voting to increase the state budget for education, are getting killed when it comes to their apparent leaving out the University of Minnesota. So no good deed goes unpunished when it comes to education in this state. The Minnesota Senate, which is Democrat, has okayed a tax hike for roads and bridges. And I have to put quotes around that. The tax hike, my understanding is, would add an additional 16 cents a gallon at current prices and would rise with the cost of fuel on top of the current 28 cent a gallon gas tax, on top of the federal gas taxes, on top of the local taxes that are on fuel. And we'll see what happens with that proposal in the House, but if it gets to the governor in any form, it'll become law. My concern is that the House, in an effort to, you know, make peace, will agree to some kind of gas tax increase. And the justifications for this are the same old saw that I've been hearing for 30 years in the state of Minnesota. Oh, it's congestion, or it's the lack of investment in roads in the last 30 years, which to me is mind-boggling. First of all, where is the lack of investment? We have light rail all over the place, basically two very expensive light rail lines, and we're putting a third in, supposedly. That's going to be now $2 billion. There are very expensive roundabouts being put in all over the state. They have redone Highway 100. They have redone 62. They have redone 94. They've redone the 610 interchange. They are redoing the Highway 100 interchanges now in the West Metro. They have redone 35W. They have redone roads around the airport, around Mall of America, and so forth. So in the last 30 years, this idea that there's been no investment in the state is nonsense. And then we get to this transit project question. And let's not forget that the Minnesota Transit Amendment that was passed, I think, in 2006 was supposed to funnel $300 million a year into, quote, transit projects. What happened to that? Where did that go? Senator Scott Dibble said in voting for the gas tax increase, we're losing our young people. Why? Because they're moving to places with amenities, the kinds of transportation they're looking for, which is patently false. Data shows young people are moving to places with jobs and futures, like Des Moines and Austin and Denver and Houston and Omaha, and literally places where there are now new businesses being built and new opportunities in the tech world and new opportunities in service industries and banks and so forth. So it's just nonsense to say that young people are moving to Houston because it has great public transit. They're moving to Houston because they're looking for jobs there, or they're moving to Austin because of the jobs opportunities there in Texas or places like that. So, you know, that's ridiculous. And so this stuff has now, this is now the same third rail of politics that used to be just entitlements, and now it's infrastructure, education, roads and bridges, and trains. You can't argue against those things because the Democrat monopoly, the urban Democrat monopoly in the state of Minnesota, it has convinced itself that this is what is necessary to make, quote unquote, Minnesota a world-class competitor. Everybody wants more money, and everybody supports it as long as someone else pays for it. But we all end up paying for it sooner or later. And it's absolutely true that if we weren't spending state money, whether it's bonding or budget on nonsense, we would have enough money for quote-unquote roads and bridges. And let me just say, I've been all over the state, you know, came in through the state, through the West last summer and through the South this spring, and I'm telling you that the roads and bridges, at least the ones that I have seen, are perfectly fine in the state of Minnesota. But supposedly the roads and bridges are bad in the state. But I would have a question for the people that listen to podcasts like this out in rural parts of Minnesota. How many of you guys in rural Minnesota think that you're going to get a new bridge or highway resurfaced, you know, a farm road resurfaced, when Rochester and Duluth and St. Paul and Minneapolis have their hands out for stadiums and for these quote-unquote infrastructure projects that are marked as transit, but really it's things for the big cities. And then as far as public transit is concerned, I can't resist this. 98% of the U.S. Commuter favors public transit for others, but only 5% of the American public anywhere uses public transit. And that includes high-density cities like New York, Washington, D.C., Chicago, and San Francisco, and it will increasingly change because increasingly people are taking trips in different directions, whatever city that they're in. I told the story in the last podcast of the guy that I met over the weekend who lives in Eden Prairie and works in Plymouth. He's never going to use the Southwest light rail line because it won't go where he needs to go. And you are starting to see more and more of those kinds of trips. No matter what they do, most people in the Twin Cities do not work downtown in either city, and in particular, not in St. Paul, unless they're employed by the state government. Transportation and development, as I said, has now taken its place next to education as a guaranteed winner for politicians to take your money to create constituencies for themselves. And we in Minnesota fall for it every time. We fall for education every time. We fall for transit every time. And I don't know why. It's a blind spot. And by the way, let's not forget the unfortunate story of Lynn Thomas, an employee of the Minnesota Senate, who was killed by that stupid green train this week at Snelling and University. The truth is, the Met Council has planned for at least 5 deaths a year due to that train. They've already budgeted in however many deaths that have occurred. I think there's been 2 now that have been killed by the Green Line so far this year. And then, as far as the much-vaunted development goes with all of this transit and all these plans, Target continues to lay people off. They've laid off another 100 executive assistants in their downtown offices. They will lay off thousands more at all their campuses, including downtown. And the Star Tribune reported that previous hairs-on-fire statements from educators about the need for STEM education for jobs in the Twin Cities was blatantly false a few years ago. That's another one that they used to get more money for education. The reality is that most new jobs in Minnesota are low-skilled, not highly skilled STEM jobs. State Republican leaders seem to be paralyzed at polling data that shows Minnesotans are left of center. Had a lot of conversations about that this week, in particular associated with the anger and frustration with a lot of people on the right and in the Tea Party movement. And it's confusing because despite all the noise and the smoke, leadership in the state, and I'm talking about Republican leadership in the state, continues to move to the moderate center and really center left. I don't know what you would call a conservative in the state of Minnesota. I don't know what you would call a Republican in the state of Minnesota. And what are Minnesotans talking about? You know, where's all the outrage? We're talking about the wild. We're talking about this stupid, idiotic Sunday liquor sales bill, which comes up every year and serves as nothing more than a distraction, and more fallout from the dance line competition 2 months ago, in which it was alleged one team of cheerleaders stole their routine from another group from Utah. I'm sure that there was a total of maybe 3,000 parents there, and you would think that this was an earth-shattering scandal in the state of Minnesota. If you want to get people talking in the state of Minnesota, go smoke meth and get arrested as a public personality, or have some sort of a bullying situation associated with hockey, or try to change the way we handle youth hockey in the state, and you will have the entire state in an uproar. But when it comes to political issues, when it comes to budgeting, when it comes to bonding, when it comes to this wholesale looting of the public treasury by the Democrat monopoly in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Duluth, nobody cares. They want to go to the lake and forget about it. Another thing that happened this week is a bunch of former generals from the Minnesota National Guard announced kids here are too fat to defend the country. Guess what? That means more money for education and physical education, as though that is going to change anything or make anyone better able to defend the country. But instead, everybody has their little special interest group, and they go out and they advocate for their little problem. You know, Minnesota has a problem. The so-called conservative movement here, apparently, and I don't mean this as criticism, I mean it as a statement of fact, is failing. It's not getting through to the population as a whole. It's not getting through to the Republican leadership, which was reelected and continues to talk conservative but act moderate. And I think it's fair to say that there's an emerging moderate center Republican Party among congressmen, among state representatives, and among the leadership for the Minnesota GOP, terrified of confrontation with the progressive left and how it plays out in the media. Now, you know, it's fair criticism, and some might consider it to be harsh, but I would ask, is it their fault? Or are they just doing what they need to do to survive because they're just not, in other words, the right in the state is just not up to the enormous task of converting people from simply being asleep when it comes to what is really going on? People, meanwhile, are simply voting with their feet. They are moving their businesses and houses to Wisconsin or North Dakota or South Dakota or Texas. And this is what's going on. A lot of businessmen and women, people who own their own businesses or even large companies, are slowly but surely bleeding out their corporate staffs and their large groups of people and the taxable income and so forth and so on to other states. And you will not be able to detect it because they're capable of doing that. A lot of guys that own businesses businesses are here 6 or 7 months out of the year. The rest of the time, they're down in the Virgin Islands, or they're in Texas, or they're in New Mexico, or someplace like that. And you wouldn't believe how many of the really wealthy people who are often touted as the liberal lights are doing that. The opportunity here in Minnesota, when we talk about opportunity and we talk about being world class, the opportunity in this state is the public-private partnership. It is the classic crony capitalist, wind power subsidy company, solar power subsidy company, ethanol subsidy company. And the idea is that the public good trumps everything. And it's the public good argument, which is, well, this is for the public good, so we should raise taxes to do this. And no one wants to confront that issue. In fact, they will avoid people who want to confront that issue. And the idea is that what ends up happening is that we radicals get pushed back to our conspiracy theories and railing about things that no one pays any attention to, and the discussion of the founders and the churches and things of that nature. The excuse is the state wants to be world class, as I said. And this is apparently, as I said, a public good. Apparently, many people in the state of Minnesota feel that light rail, free education, a robust public-private partnership with businesses, in other words, the Chamber of Italian Fascism model, the Twin West model, let's say, is the way to go. Now, what's the outsider's view? Well, Minnesota and its cities have always been great media markets. I mean, let's be honest. Minnesota is Iowa with the 15th largest market, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Without it, if Minneapolis and St. Paul was Des Moines, we would be smaller than Iowa, right, basically. So we have this city that grew up around a river that grew up on grain and agriculture and banking, and we have another city across the river that grew up on railroads, basically, really have kind of continued to grow along those lines, but they're not that special. Minneapolis and St. Paul are great, but they're not amazing. Great places to raise families and home to some great corporations, and corporations that, in my view, have really grown up with the market. You know, like Dayton Hudson, for example, which became Target, and the banner which is hoisted that claims world class generally in the state is sports teams and stadiums. People here think being politically liberal and socially conservative is the path to world class, if that's possible, or they just don't care. They just want to go to the lake and forget about it and avoid confronting themselves or their neighbors with these complex questions. And I joke about it, but I think one of the things about Minnesota is if you have a political argument with a neighbor, they'll never speak to you again. You will not be friends, and they will not deal with you. They'll certainly call the fire department if your house is on fire, or if you end up on the front lawn having a heart attack. They're not horrible, evil people, but they won't deal with you if they think you're one of those crazy white right-wing people, because they're afraid of you. And legislators then are free to argue about how much to increase education, and you're marked as a conservative if you believe that you have a 2% increase versus a 10 or 15% increase, or a 1 or 2% increase in the gas tax versus 16% increase in 16-cent increase in the gas tax, or, you know, more money for trains with caveats as opposed to just let's spend willy-nilly on the trains, just in the Minneapolis and St. Paul area, by the way, or down in Rochester where all the rich doctors are. The problem is, in many states in our region, the movement is away from that kind of government. Minnesota is becoming an island in the Midwest, a Western or Northeastern blue state model in a sea of states, which are adopting pro-growth policies at great cost to their political psyche because they're having the arguments. Maybe I should say it's because they have the arguments, or maybe I should say I don't know why they're able to do this, but they're doing it. And if those pro-business policies start to work, and I think they will, they are already working in Indiana, they're starting to work in Wisconsin, you will see changes in Michigan, and so on, where the states are starting to address these issues, whether it's right to work or Act 10 or budget issues, changing the political makeup of the state. If the policies work, eventually Minnesota will have to change, although it's going to be late to the party, and I don't know if it's going to be in this generation. Right now, that's not the case in Minnesota. Supposedly, everything is rosy in the state of Minnesota. Now, we know that that isn't true, but, you know, I would say this. First of all, 40 years ago, New York and Illinois and Michigan would have laughed if you'd have told them that they were going to be headed for bankruptcy in 40 years. And I'm serious. With all three of those states, they have, you know, huge problems with pensions and overspending. Michigan, obviously, is a Detroit issue, but Illinois is in serious trouble, and so is New York, and really, so is California. The difference is California, and Minnesota isn't, and Minnesota isn't Illinois, and Minnesota isn't New York. We don't have New York City, and we don't have Chicago, and we don't have the natural resources and business resources that California has, for example, Hollywood or Silicon Valley. We can all talk about we want quality of life in Minnesota, but there are limits to what can be done. The bottom line is today, when you're talking about raising up a Fortune 500 company, companies don't need as many employees as they used to. They can relocate where they choose. It's much easier to relocate a server farm to Texas or Oklahoma or Kansas if there's a tax benefit than it is to have to put it here, let's say. And they can relocate their money where they choose, when they choose, with a punch of a button. So tax policy becomes really a competitive question. Is this the kind of place, Minnesota, where you can start and grow a business? And I'm talking about today, not 50 years ago to now. I'm not talking about businesses that started 100 years ago, like Dayton Hudson, and grew up to be, you know, Target. But today, if you were going to start a business, would you start it here? Or would you start it in Texas? Or would you start it in Oklahoma? Or would you start it in Kansas? And why? So like California and Illinois and New York, Minnesota is a state with a lot of people who work for the government, state private partnerships, nonprofits, and so forth. And what the right is worried about going forward is whether or not private businesses are going to be able to come into the state and function without having to get in bed with the state government and adhere to all these rules and regulations and taxes and so forth. And will that eventually start to become a drag on economic growth in the state of Minnesota? And then you start talking about that stuff and you hear this question, is Minnesota politically hopeless for the conservative approach? And many of the people I talk to think it is. It is very hard to cover politics in this state or talk about politics in this state because nobody ever deals with the problems head on and nothing really significant ever happens. I have seen issues come and go, and I have heard the outrage year after year after year on the stadiums and taxes and trains, and yet we keep building them and the taxes keep going up and we keep spending more money for education every year. Why? Is it because of the monopoly of Democratic rule in the urban areas, which overpowers the votes from other parts of the state? I don't think so. I think that's part of it. But I think that the state is very much moderate. I think that's a huge piece. And I'm talking to the people who are convinced that there's this conservative movement out there. I'm not sure that there is. I'm not sure that and I don't agree with them, but I'm not sure that the moderate center mushy group of people running Minnesota GOP right now, first of all, I don't think they're conservatives. But other than that, I don't think that they're necessarily barking up the wrong tree when it comes to the electorate of the state of Minnesota. The question is, why can't that be overcome? And if it can, how is it overcome? And when will it be overcome? And then I guess the final question that certainly some people would ask in leadership would be, well, should it be overcome? Are you going to change the nature of Minnesotans? If this is the nature of the beast, are you going to change it? And then we get into this whole question of what role the people actually play. Is this the way Minnesotans are? You know, it's a truism in this state that during the summer, if you try to get a hold of somebody on the phone on a Friday or a Monday, it's almost impossible because everybody goes to the lake. And they're not going to tell you that. But most people are working 2- and 3- and 4-day work weeks, or they're working from the lake because that's what people do here. They come here for the quality of life. They come here for the fishing and the hunting and the lake and so forth, supposedly. Now, this nature of the beast, supposedly, supposedly is beginning to change in places like Michigan and even Illinois because of the disasters that are brewing in those states. And people are beginning, it's beginning to dawn on people. They're beginning to wake up to this problem with the monopoly with the Democratic view in most of these places that says we have to spend more money on all of these things because it's the public good. It certainly has begun to change in Wisconsin because one man built a grassroots support network that brought him to the governor's mansion and a new approach ultimately in both houses of the state government. But the fight continues in Wisconsin. I'm not sure there is a crisis point in Minnesota right now because for the time being, things just aren't bad enough. Things just aren't, you know, people aren't upset enough. They're more upset about the dance line competition than they are, or really this stupid Sunday liquor sales thing than they are about anything else. Now, maybe that's a wedge issue. I don't know. But when it comes to the political makeup of the state, I don't see things changing too much. And I've been here a long time. I don't see that things have changed that much in 30 years. You know, the great politicians from Minnesota, Republican or Democrat, have always been either, you know, super liberal Democrats like Hubert Humphrey and Walter Mondale, or they are moderate Republicans like Dave Dernberger and Norm Coleman. That's what we're dealing with in the state of Minnesota. So when people who are super right-wing want that to change and they want to see a more libertarian state, boy, that's a mountain to climb. Let me tell you. And I think I'm not saying I disagree with that. I just see people banging their heads against the wall consistently and being very angry at leadership. And I don't expect leadership to be libertarian. I don't see and expect leadership in the state of Minnesota to start tearing down these structures. You're not going to see anybody in the state legislature, with the exception of a very few, even consider introducing things like Act 10 or right-to-work legislation in Minnesota. And I doubt very seriously if any of these governors or governor's candidates, I call them governors, but I mean gubernatorial candidates going forward, are going to talk about right-to-work or Act 10 or push that kind of a thing in the state, because they do not want to have this fight. They don't want, the media will literally destroy them. The Star Tribune and the TV stations and Minnesota Public Radio have a stranglehold on this state, and they will destroy anyone who tries to even talk about those things. And you just have to accept that if you want to talk about breaking the union stranglehold on the state, for example. And then you get into this whole passive aggressive, quirky thing, which is how the rest of the world sees Minnesota. So the Democrat Labor Coalition, which is essentially state government workers, city workers, teachers, and their dependents, not workers, and activists in urban areas, have a chokehold on this state when you combine it with the left-wing media complex. Where's the conservative coalition that finds a way to wedge in and begin to get the attention and intention of people who potentially vote? And this is the kind of stuff I think we have to talk about. This is why I think I'm misunderstood to a large degree by some people, because they take my criticism immediately defensive because they say, for example, you know, I've worked really hard to educate people about Common Core in my BPOU. I don't know if that's where we need to go. I'm not sure that that's the answer. But I guess the thing that I'm saying is maybe I'm completely off base, but I don't see this great conservative movement in Minnesota as really taking hold. I see it, in fact, as diminishing and becoming more brittle and having even more difficulties getting the message across. And, you know, I'm very disappointed with this legislative session. On the other hand, how much do you expect Republicans in the House to do when they don't have the Senate and they don't have the gubernatorial, you know, they don't have the governor's mansion? So, you know, have they done enough to make people believe that there's perhaps a conservative foothold for future elections? I mean, I what is it, a 10-seat majority in the House? So, you know, somebody asked me at one of these things, you know, what's it going to take? It's going to take a transformational figure in the state of Minnesota. It's going to take someone to run for governor who can somehow bridge the gap and pull everybody in and get enough votes to be elected and yet govern from the libertarian base or the conservative base. And I just don't know if that's possible. I think people who are thinking that way, I honestly think that, you know, despite all the criticisms about certain groups of people being old and so forth, I think these ideas, particularly the ideas about less government as it relates to technology, these are new ideas. You know, I laid that line of BS out to a physicist while I was sitting at the Nepenthe, which is about ground zero for the hippie movement in Big Sur, California, when I was out there in the mobile podcast command unit. And he looked at me and he said, "You're absolutely right." I said, "You know, we need less government because technology doesn't want government. Technology wants to be unfettered so that we can, you know, grow it and we can grow the applications and grow the tools and so forth." And he and I disagreed on almost everything else politically, but he said, "You're absolutely right about the technology part of this." So this is a cutting edge kind of view. And I think people that have those views generally don't stay in this state. I think they consider this state a backwater. And they consider it a backwater with a particularly intransigent political clot that can't be cut out of moderate Republicans and liberal Democrats who simply just don't understand what you're talking about when you talk about stuff like that. So, you know, those are my reactions after kind of just looking at the Minnesota political news and giving you an update. I don't think it's negative so much as it's realistic, and I think we should talk about it in the future. So thanks for listening to Podcast 363, the Bob Davis Podcasts. I got to make a quick correction. I was talking about Bakland R&D in a previous podcast, and I mentioned that John Bakland is going to be doing a webinar on 3D printing, which he's done a couple of with Stratasys, the great 3D printer maker. And I said it was June 23rd or something, or 21st. Actually, it's June 1st. Now, there's more information at Bakland.com, B-A-K-L-U-N-D.com. If you're in manufacturing, if you are looking to have parts manufactured, Bakland's really on the cutting edge of this new world called additive manufacturing or 3D printing. And John's webinar will tell you more about that. So click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. It will take you there, or you know, you can just go to Bakland.com. Also want to thank Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, this podcast 363. Don't forget, emergency service is what it's all about, and have them check your AC because they might be able to save you some money during the global warming summer. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They got lots of trucks, so they go metro-wide, and that means the suburbs too. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Think air conditioning, especially as it gets warmer. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Want to thank Mad K Studios for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis Podcast, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. I've told you all about that. Mad K is going to be out at some of these antique car shows this summer. I'll tell you more about that as we get closer to it. Click on their banner and all the other banners at thebobdavispodcast.com for more information. And thank you guys for listening on blogtalkradio.com. You might want to check that out. First of all, there's a link on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and it's a player which will play the last podcast that loaded at Blog Talk, or you can go there. Also, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm saving them up for diesel fuel for the next big trip in the mobile podcast command unit. More details coming on that. Thank you for listening to Podcast 363.